through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
This is a 27-yard field goal attempt from the left hash mark for Blair Walsh to try to give the Vikings the lead. The snap, the kick is up.
Missed
it's
it.
No good! Are you kidding me? It's no good! Oh, baby, it's Christmas in Minnesota, and the Seahawks have dodged a bullet.
That was a negative 4,000 degrees in Minnesota. A game between
absolute zero.
Absolute zero. Wild card game between the Seahawks and the Vikings. It was a sure thing that he would make that field goal. Why wouldn't you make that field goal, Blair Walsh? And, of course, he misses it, and Seahawks defenders just fall to the ground, like thanking their lucky stars that this happened. It was such an emotional response from the team after a hard-fought game in freezing temperatures. Joining us right now is Michael Bumpus. Bump, what are your memories of watching that game?
Feeling like the defenders. Like, I can't believe that this just happened. This is the luckiest team in all of the land. And it's funny because, I mean, God must love the Seahawks, man, because there are some moments like that over the past, 6 years where you're just like, how did this team pull this off? I was in disbelief.
It was truly one of those games where if you think back on all the different moments that happened, that was a wild, wild game. 10-9, but you had the snap that happened over Russell Wilson's head where he puts his mouthpiece back in, slides underneath, finds Tyler Lockett, Doug Baldwin's one-handed catch. I mean, there were some really good moments in that game. But, yeah, capped off with that missed field goal. And, you know, then you bring Blair Walsh to come join you for the Seahawks, which I still can't believe.
We don't need
to
get to Chapter 2 of the Blair Walsh saga. We'll just leave it at he missed the kick in the wild card game. Ha ha, great. And then we'll end it with there. I don't know who this Blair Walsh is that you speak of.
That's very fair. Bump, how are we doing on this Friday, man? How are you feeling coming into this game? I don't know about you, but playoff football just gets me into a totally different mindset. Just obviously being a former player, this is the time you live for, man.
Yeah, I'm anxious, man. I feel like I got a game tomorrow. And then it's it's Saturday instead of Sunday. So it's like, man, I get Christmas early. You know what I mean? Like I'm loving it. This is probably my most favorite Blue Friday because the turnaround is quick. Like we're going to be in the stadium watching these guys battle tomorrow. And I feel like they're ready. I know the Rams are going to be tough. This is a good football team, great defense, quarterback issues. We'll see what happens there. I just know it's going to be a great game, and I'm anxious and interested to see what number 3 does tomorrow.
Bump, you are on with Danny and Gallant. You're usually on with them, especially for the Pete Carroll show. You're also going to be previewing this game for the Seahawks as part of the Seahawks pre- and post-game show. You'll also be in the post-game show. So you'll have plenty of good insight. I am positive you're going to be asked a version of this question. So I'm going to go ahead and talk about it now because it's the matchup I'm watching. Right. And it goes without saying, but it is DK Metcalf versus Jalen Ramsey. You had something interesting to say that I really liked. You were talking with Danny and Gallant, and you were like, look, Jalen Ramsey, best corner in the game. But eventually, you got to take a shot. So is that what Rush should do in this one?
Yeah, I'm not saying you scan the field and say number 20.
Right.
We're going at him. Nah, I'm not saying that at all.
we're targeting him.
we're going to go after him. We're going to prove a point. No, I'm saying that if your read allows it, if there's a situation where DK's to that side, they're matched up, the defense looks like they're in that soft zone that they're going to play, and your read takes you there, don't be afraid to go there. You got to respect Ramsey. Dude is a baller, grown man, 6'2", 215. Like, guy is a baller, but so is DK. And as a champion, if you have that champion mentality, that competitor mentality, you're going to take your shots because you believe in number 14. But now move 14 around. Do what they've been doing. Put him in a slot. Start him on one side of formation. Motion him over because you want to get him some easy targets as well.
Hold up, Bump. You can't say that or else Jalen Ramsey's going to get really, really upset.
Don't make him
angry.
He
does not believe that that's fair, that game planning shouldn't exist. It should go man, mano y mano. Are you buying that, Bump? I mean, that is some next level trying to like, you know, really trick DK and this offense into trying to take these one-on-one matchups. But on the other side, this guy could go man-to-man if he wanted to. He could follow DK all the way around, right?
Yeah, he could. If he's going to trip and say, oh, no, you got to go man to man, tell your D coordinator to let you follow DK. Actually play man and follow DK. Ramsey plays the zone. You know this, Jay. 80% of the time, he's got his butt to the sideline. He's looking at the quarterback, and he's dropping into a deep zone. So it's like, okay, you want to play man up, talk to your D coordinator and let him follow DK.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And oftentimes, too, in that game last time around, typically what you've seen is Jalen just kind of be on an island on its own, but they really did dial up a lot of cloud coverage, meaning, you know, more cover two where you have a safety over the top. That really surprised me with DK and Jalen Ramsey. So, yeah, when I heard that conversation happen during the week bump, I'm like, what is this guy talking about? What is he talking about? He's getting help too. Now, in this game, I've talked about the need to go up tempo at different points to change up the pace of the game. How do you feel how the pace of the game needs to go? And the other way I've described it is rope-a-dope, that, hey, you're going to go 12 rounds with this team. You don't care about the way the first half goes. As long as you're keeping pace, that's all that matters, and that you explode in the second half or the fourth quarter. What do you think needs to happen for this team in order to walk out with a win?
I think the Hawks need to control the tempo, whether that be they're picking it up or slowing it down. People hear tempo and automatically think, okay, they're just getting plays off every 15 seconds, right? Tempo, tempo, tempo.
Right.
No, you can slow it down too. You can, when you have a personnel that you like on the football field, I'm talking from the offensive side. If I look over there and I see a personnel that I like, I can speed the tempo up as far as getting on the ball and then slow it down from there and get a call from the sideline, because it's easier for the coordinator to call a play that he likes when he knows exactly what type of personnel and what look he's going to get. So I think they just need to control the tempo. And I also think they need to get all three running backs involved this weekend. I think Penny needs to continue to do what he's doing, but Carlos Hyde and Rashad Penny need to be involved as well, just to give them different looks. That's when the Rams are healthy and they have three different backs back there, that helps their offense. I think that can help this offense as well. So it's control the tempo, whether that's speeding it up or slowing it down, and getting all three running backs some touches.
Now, Bump, the biggest question heading into the game, I think from both cities and both fans, are actually going to be about the Rams, and it's about who's going to start under center. Sean McVay joked that we're not going to find out until 1:39, kickoff at 1:40. And you know what? I don't even know that he's joking. I think he might suit up. He might dress both quarterbacks and have them both go out there and just figure out if Goff's healthy enough. Maybe you play one and put in the other later. I don't know exactly what you do, but who would you rather face if you're this Seahawks defense?
Who would I rather face? Honestly, Jared Goff right now, just because we know he's not 100% healthy. I don't think either quarterback you see, I don't think they pose just so much of a different challenge. Granted, Wolford can run the rock. And I always remind people, well, the Hawks did play against Kyler Murray two times this year and did okay against him when it comes to running the football. That's a concern, but it's not something that just makes you go, oh, my God, we have to change this defense. Wolford has his deficiencies as well. He's the second game starting, and it's in the playoff, primetime TV. You know, you're playing against a good defense right now. With Jared Goff, look, your thumb's jacked up. We're going to get after you. You're already scary when you're getting blitzed. Now he's going to be scary with a bum thumb. He's going to turn the football over. That's what he likes to do. I'd take Jared Goff just because of his health. I think Wolford, because this is his second game, either the moment's going to be too big or he's not even going to realize the moment and he's going to low-key ball out. You know what I mean? I feel like I know what I'm going to get from Jared Goff. I'm not sure what I'm going to get from Wolford.
Yeah, and that's a really fair point, Bump. And I think that's a really good, really good point, because that's why I said Wolford to me is the one that scares me the most, is just simply because he's such a wild card.
See,
you have no idea. Experience matters, but just like what Bump has said, when you have a wild card of a quarterback like that, you have no idea what you're going to get. They've been able to see on film that he can run around a little bit.
He's faced one NFL defense.
I agree. So I'm not saying that I am fearful of him, but he is a wild card in the matchup. You know exactly what you're going to get from Goff. There is comfortability in knowing exactly the type of player that you're going to get and how that offense functions under Jared Goff. Bumpus, one of the other aspects that we are going to dive into later on is the Seahawks defense. They've got an opportunity to show that they can replicate the type of dominant performance that they had the last time around this defense. If they're going to do that, How are they going to be able to accomplish that in your mind?
To me, it comes down to pressure. And that's where Jamal Adams comes in. I know he's not listed. He's off the injury report right now. But he is the reason why the Seattle Seahawks bring a lot of pressure. He's constantly in the box getting after the quarterback. They have to make this offense feel like they're not clicking. And they have to play the boot, the play action, like they did the last time they faced the Rams. That was the best I've ever seen them play that. Typically, that's what the Rams like to do, get you going east-west, boom, dink and dunk, get the guys the ball, and let them run with it. Linebackers played great last time against the Rams when it came to the play-action boot. They're in that gray area, right? Do I jump on this flat defender? Do I fill the intermediate route behind me? What do I do there? They played excellent. So they have to get pressure on them. And if Jamal Adams, he's going to play. But if there's a moment where his shoulder starts to hurt him a bit and he has to take a few plays off, I'm okay with Ryan Neal as well. The last game when Jamal Adams went out, the next couple plays, Ryan Neal was in, they blitzed him one time. So they still have confidence in him. It's not going to look like Jamal Adams. Nobody is Jamal Adams. He is who he is. But the key to this defense, apply pressure and handle the boot, and I think they should be okay.
You think they can hold the Rams offense out of the end zone again?
Man, I think they get in once.
Yeah.
Once. Holding the field goals, but this is still a good offense. Still got Cooper Kupp, Robert Woods, still got the running backs back there. No matter who's that quarterback, this offense doesn't require a quarterback to take a traditional five-step drop, pat the ball, read the safety. It's like, no, look, we're going to run across the field, find the open zone, hit the player that's running across the zone.
Now, when we are looking specifically at Russell Wilson, and we're talking about the performances that he has had over the last couple of weeks, what do you think can be done with your starting offensive line, your original five guys? Do you think it really will make that big of a difference in this matchup for him in the time that he will get?
No, I don't, Jake. This is the fifth or sixth time that all starters will play in a game. That's not even half the season. So other than those five or six times, he's had other guys on the offensive line. You know, and maybe they haven't performed as well as Shell Wood or Upati, but he's had other guys and they still have had time to throw the football. I think with Russell Wilson, it's anticipating what's going to happen. And that's what's hard against this defense, because the Rams are going to show you a different look. They're going to look like they're rushing six. They're going to drop two linebackers. Leonard Floyd is going to start in a 3-point. Then he's going to drop down in the zone. Pre-snap and during the play can look completely different. That's what they're good at. They try to confuse guys. So it's up to Russell to kind of anticipate what's going to happen and get a clue and get a tip. As far as that offensive line, I think they'll be fine. They've shown all year that you can plug people in, you can mix guys up. They're still going to have success on offense.
He is analyst Michael Bumpus. You can hear him on the Seahawks pre- and post-game show, plus on the airwaves here at 710 ESPN. He'll be on there for Monday's Pete Carroll show, a regular contributor here. You can also go follow him at MichaelBumpus5. Do it right now. Do it if you're not already. I promise. Bump always brings the heat. Thanks so much, Bump.
All right, guys. Have a good one.
You too. All right. Let's get to four down territory.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Mac and Jack's African Amber Ale.
With Jake and Stacy.
You live for moments like this. Time for us to step up and take it.
First down, Jake, what are two keys to a Seahawks victory tomorrow?
Two keys to a Seahawks victory tomorrow. Number one, I think it's got to be being able to run the ball effectively with Chris Carson. This is the opportunity that you have waited for in terms of keeping Chris Carson healthy for these types of matchups. I do not believe that the Seahawks are going to try and ground and pound with Chris Carson, but the opportunities you give Chris Carson, they better count. You better be able to move this really difficult defensive front, and there are opportunities to do so. I'm really, really counting on this offensive line to step up big in this game and to be able to win the 6-inch battle, as Ray Roberts has said on our airwaves, in this game with that Rams defensive front. I think that that is number one. The second thing is, defensively for the Seahawks, you have to dominate the edges. You have to keep contain on this Rams offense. If you're able to do that, and you keep the game within the kill box, as KJ Wright explained to us, which is mean into the teeth of the defense where everybody is, you will be able to be very, very effective in this game. if you allow the Rams to get on the edge, that gives this offense life. It gives Sean McVay, Jared Goff, the rest of the group extreme confidence. And one of the things that they have done extremely well this season is get their playmakers the ball in space. They are one of the leading teams in the NFL in yards after catch. Mm-hmm. They've got dynamic weapons. Robert Woods, Cooper Kupp, Gerald Everett, Tyler Higbee,
Reynolds.
Those guys do a great job with the ball in their hands in space. And if you can limit that and be great tacklers, sure tacklers, disciplined football players like they were the last time around, I think you own this game again.
The kill box, Curtis.
Okay, fine. Second down, jeez. Stacy.
Curtis.
I'm looking for one stat we should know about the Rams defense. Just one.
One thing that we should all know about the Rams defense. This is from Shil Kapadia of The Athletic. Great reporter. Great guy with stats, too, because he highlighted what the Rams have been so great at this year, and that is stopping any deep passing attempts. Oh, that's a bummer, because Russell Wilson is the best deep thrower in the league, so they might have to find another way to win this one. The Rams are number one league-wide in DVOA on deep passing attempts. They're just incredibly effective there. They've allowed just 13 deep completions. Shale adds that no defense was more effective at rushing four or fewer, meaning they don't need to sell out just to blitz the quarterback and get a pass rush where Russell Wilson, if he gets it out, can find a guy with a ton of space. No. They are also great in coverage when they're rushing the quarterback, and they can do so effectively with just their front three guys or maybe an extra linebacker in there. So they are going to be a tough one to beat. Thankfully, Seahawks offense pretty good, too. So we'll see how this one turns out.
Third down. Killbox, Jake. What is your confidence level that the Seahawks will be fully healthy heading into the game tomorrow?
Well, here in cut number three, one of the big ones that really popped up over the last couple days, there's been a few of them. There's Jaron Reed. We were worried about Jamal Adams. He's not even on the injury report anymore. Rashad Penny comes up on the injury report, but he's your third string running back hitting this game. That does not overly concern me, especially when you have Alex Collins, who I think has done a really good job, and he showed in the 49ers game. But here in cut number three, the one that worried me the most was Shaquille Griffin showing up on the injury report yesterday. Here's what P had to say.
It's not related. It's just he's just a little bit tight. We just want to give him a day.
So it wasn't a serious injury, wasn't a serious aggravation. It's just more of, hey, we're going to be smart with this. We don't even want to take a chance on this. If it's feeling tight at all, we need to have Shaquille Griffin on the field. He can afford to not participate in a Friday walkthrough. That's what it was. Friday walkthrough practice, Shaquille Griffin sits out. I'm okay with that. I feel comfortable with that. So this Seahawks team should be as healthy as it has been in a long, long time heading into this game.
Fourth down. How do you get the aggressiveness back to this offense without consistently putting the ball at risk?
Well, you're going to have to take calculated shots down the field. I thought that they did a really good job last time around in taking calculated shots down the field. They just weren't able to connect. They will do that again. But in order to keep the aggressiveness to this offense, I really think you have to fuel that offense with tempo. And as we talked about with Michael Bumpus, it's in a variety of different ways. It doesn't mean that you play with high pace all the time throughout the game, but it's that you are able to switch it up in a drive. You're able to get the tempo up. You're keeping the Rams defense guessing with how they need to approach the line of scrimmage. And when you're able to do that, and you're able to limit Brandon Staley and this group from being able to substitute and change personnels and to perfectly line up against your offense, it puts them more in a bind. And it's really hard to put this Rams defense in bad situations. The most success that they've had versus the Rams is when they've been more aggressive with their tempo overall. So that's what I really am wanting to see. I want to see them limit the amount of times that they are snapping the ball with just 5 seconds on the clock.
If you missed the show, you can always listen via the 710 Sports app powered by Dubin Law Group. Guys, listen. Deshaun Watson, he's airing all the Texans' dirty laundry. This story I cannot stop talking about. I've been waiting for it, Curtis, all day long, and I'm glad we finally are able to get to it in the timeline, because I think that the Texans made a major mistake here. The first step of it was the biggest mistake that they made. Never should have, well, should have done it, but didn't follow through. And that's going to make sense in a minute.
This conversation, I think, really stands out to me about a chance, I guess. And I don't mean this as this is what needs to happen, because personally in the NFL, I just don't think it's realistic in terms of the NFL ever becoming like the NBA in terms of player control. But when you have somebody like Deshaun Watson, who really could potentially dictate the terms of his future there in Houston, this one really intrigues me to see how this plays out and to see if that Deshaun Watson can have a voice within his own organization, or if he has a voice in where he's going to play in the future. And if not, then it just further shows that this league, the players don't have much say in a lot of what goes on compared to other leagues, other professional leagues.
This is a fascinating story. I can't wait to talk about it. Plus, another Seahawk has been added to the injury report. We'll tell you the latest next on Jake and Stacey.
This is The Timeline
with Jake and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by the Pro Club. Let's turn to the IRG injury report, brought to you by IRG Physical and Hand Therapy. I made Jake a little bit nervous just now because heading into this segment, I said another Seahawk added to the injury report. I was talking about Penny I know. I'm sorry. After I said it, you like looked at me and you were like, someone else? I was like, no. Oh, sorry. I was talking
about
since Thursday's injury report, another Seahawk has been added. So if you missed it, Rashad Penny has since been added as questionable with a knee injury. Jared Goff was non-committal when asked about his availability. Here he is in cut four.
I'm in the mindset that if I have to play at any point, I'm ready to play and just continue to progress well.
Ultimately, will it be your call whether you play Saturday or not?
It's me and Sean, and you know, ultimately it's his call, but you know, it's a lot to do with where I feel I'm at, and you know, obviously, I'm not going to reveal anything. I feel good, and I'm progressing well. And whether it's starting, whether it's not, I'll be ready to go.
No commitment there on whether we'll see Goff or Wolford. I honestly think that what's going to happen, I'm not kidding. I know I'm kind of throwing darts right now, but I think that both quarterbacks will suit up. I think that we will not know until the Rams take the field. I think Goff will start, and then they'll see how he feels. And if he can't hang in there, or if he has too many off-target throws or gets a pick, they'll put Wolford in.
I think that's very fair. But to me, this approach by the Rams, I cannot tell you how much I hate it. Because what they're doing, in my opinion, is they're trying to outthink the room. Well, coaches in general don't like to reveal information. That's why Pete Carroll, when he initially said, well, I don't know, we're going to have to go to game time. And Jamal Adams the next day says, I'm playing.
Pete Carroll, we're going to game time.
Jamal, we're going to game time. Do you not understand?
Jamal, it's always game time.
Yeah. but I love that from Jamal Adams. Because guess what? Who cares? Who cares? There is not a legitimate competitive advantage that you genuinely have if you're Pete Carroll and the Seahawks, if you know whether Jamal Adams is going to play or not. They're just legitimately. But in this, what Sean McVay wants is the idea for the Seahawks to have to prepare for both quarterbacks. Oh, you got to prepare for John Wolford. You got to prepare for the different things that he can do. I don't think it's all that earth-shattering for this Seahawks defense to have to prepare for John Wolford. Okay, you have to prepare for a couple QB designed runs or a scramble from John Wolford. Okay. It's nothing that they haven't faced before. It's John Wolford's not more dynamic than Kyler Murray or Josh Allen or any of the other quarterbacks that they have faced. But this also, if I'm Jared Goff as a competitor and I feel like I am going to play in this game and I am ready to play in this game, I want to scream it from the rooftops that I am going to be playing and ready to go for my team and build that confidence with my offense, with my group, instead of trying to play these shadow games. And what it does as a quarterback, Stacey, is it does leave room for doubt.
Cooper Kupp, wide receiver for the Rams, was on the COVID reserve lists. He has already been activated. He was activated earlier this week. The second player on that list, defensive lineman Michael Brockers, has also just been activated. So Michael Brockers and Cooper Kupp in this game. Kupp was in their last meeting.
He was.
And he was.
And Brockers was too.
Yeah, and he was a go-to Kupp on third down. So it's not anything the Seahawks haven't faced. It's not like they, I mean, Cam Akers will be a difference in this one. Cam Akers was out last time.
Yes.
Daryl Henderson Jr. went out of the game. So I'm assuming, I think both those guys, I'm not sure about Henderson. I'm assuming he is, but Akers certainly back. So there are guys returning that were not in this matchup last week. But Kupp and Brockers were more guys that I was just hoping would not make it back.
You're just hoping that it would just help out just a little bit not to have to face those two guys. Both guys are very key for that defense. When you talk about Brockers, he has really played well this season. He is a guy that does a great job at the line of scrimmage in the run and the pass game. He is difficult to handle, and we all know what Cooper Kupp can do on third downs in particular. So, hey, it's best against best, and that's what this is all about.
All right, let me get to this MLB story before I move on to Deshaun Watson. Fired Angels employee Bubba Harkins told the LA Times that he provided a sticky substance to numerous starting pitchers that helped increase grip and spin rate. Wonder what it was. He also claims the MLB has evidence on Garrett Cole, Justin Verlander, Max Scherzer, and Felix Hernandez.
What is up with the MLB in these situations? Like, they constantly find themselves in these situations. But here's one that really stands out to me. Justin Verlander and Garrett Cole. So if these two guys at the time were with the Houston Astros while they were also cheating through the sign-stealing scandal, and you had your two best pitchers also cheating.
No, Justin only thinks it's a problem when you inject it into your body or eat it. When you're using a foreign sticky substance or stealing signs, it doesn't count. That doesn't count because it's not
very quick to point the finger.
Yeah.
But if you look closely at that finger, there might be something on it.
I missed that part of it. Mm. I didn't understand. So thank you for
sorting it out.
Yeah. Helping me with that. Because to me, what that sounds like is there was on multiple levels, there was cheating going on top of the scandal that you had.
Yep.
And that 2017 World Series title that I was initially calling for, that some people said, wow, that sets a bad precedent. I believe more than ever that should be ripped away.
A bad precedent for taking back your World Series when you cheated to get it?
Yeah, there were some people saying, well, you just don't really do that in baseball. It wouldn't really accomplish much. It wouldn't really do anything. Are you kidding me? I think it sets a really high standard of, if you're going to cheat in this league, we will take away the most precious thing that anybody could be rewarded with. And I am just blown away. If this is indeed true, which Bubba Harkins has text messages from players, and Garrett Cole in particular, from seeking him out. I mean, this could blow up in Major League Baseball's face real, real fast.
I still think with that, too many people were like, everyone steals signs. Yeah, everyone finds ways to gain an advantage in any sport. You've talked about it before. Backup quarterbacks look to try to take signs and cues from other teams and then communicate that. Guys always try to say, people know to watch for the second baseman. People will try to steal signs. How many teams set up a camera in a live feed in center field and go through this elaborate scheme? That's what they don't want.
Hang on trash cans. Yeah.
It was elaborate.
Curtis, in your opinion, where would this rank, or what impact negatively would this have on the league if this indeed comes together, that this was indeed a legit scandal, a widespread scandal with all of the top pitchers or most of the top pitchers in Major League Baseball?
Well, I mean, what we saw with the Astros is that if players are willing to rat on each other, then nothing will come of it in terms of player punishment. So if there is smoke to this fire here, or fire to where you're smelling smoke, then maybe there's going to be a handful of player punishments, but I don't see it, because pitchers have been trying to doctor baseball since the dawn of the sport's existence, whether that be through pine tar or, you know, using sandpaper or something like that.
Yeah.
This is just another way for pitchers to try and gain any kind of advantage, and yeah, this is you know, it's just kind of how baseball has always been.
All right, let me get to this final story. You guys can sound off on it because we just have about a minute here. So the Houston Texans have hired Nick Caserio to fill the void in their GM spot with their organization. The problem is Deshaun Watson was reportedly told by ownership that he would help be in charge or be consulted with the hiring of the GM and head coach. He was not consulted for this. In fact, there was a separate report that he was in favor of at least getting an interview, the organization with Eric Bieniemy, the OC for the Chiefs, and had heard good things about him and been recommended him by Patrick Mahomes himself. Eric Bieniemy reportedly not interviewed at all, and Deshaun Watson obviously feeling a little slighted that the organization told him, yeah, we'll go to you when we make decisions, and then went to him and said, oh, and also we've hired this guy to be your boss.
And I love that the Texans have tried to go out and make damage control, then leak stuff to the press that, oh, well, we tried to call Deshaun Watson, but he's not answering our calls. Well, when you fundamentally, in that very instance, you disregard what Deshaun's greatest desire is to have Eric Bieniemy as your head coach, and you don't even interview him, that to me is a problem. If you don't want to hire Eric Bieniemy, fine. But don't tell Deshaun Watson that he can be a part of the decision-making process and that you're going to counsel with him before you make decisions. And when he gives you his number one want, you don't even interview the guy?
Yeah.
That, to me, is a slap in the face if you're Deshaun Watson. And so, yeah, I'm not going to return your phone calls if you're trying to call me because you've already shown your hand. You've already shown that you're all talk and that you really genuinely don't care about my opinion. And when this stuff is out, this stuff is being aired by Deshaun Watson, it is because you are trying to muddy this up. You're trying to make it as difficult as possible on the organization to pressure them to make one of two choices. Start taking him more seriously or to trade him. And I will be curious to see how this pans out, because if Deshaun Watson can make this very difficult for that organization and find a way to get himself out, I think it opens a huge door to everybody else.
We got some good stuff coming up on Jake and Stacey still. We've got our game show getting you guys ready. Jake and Curtis facing off. We've got Brian Windhorst, ESPN NBA reporter, talking about the latest NBA expansion news. But next, one opportunity for the Seahawks defense and one mistake they cannot make.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Blitz is coming. Russ is going to let it fly. He's got Metcalf deep. Metcalf reaches up. He makes the catch near midfield. What a play call by the Seahawks. Just throw it deep, and Metcalf makes the catch. He has been spectacular today, and the Seahawks now can use up this last timeout of the Eagles and can run this clock down. The big first down, the huge completion, and we're getting the one-finger salute from the fans left in the stands.
Dave Wyman's laugh at that kills me every time. I love it. We are playing wild card highlights all day long on Jake and Stacey. That one, your most recent wild card win over the Philadelphia Eagles, a pass to DK Metcalf to get the first down and seal the win on that one.
Yeah, that was a big time play. And that was really, truly a forecast of what was to come the following year for DK Metcalf. I mean, his rookie year and the progression that he had and the way that he was able to play in that game in particular, absolutely outstanding. And so you saw it come together for him this season, and you're hoping to see a lot more explosive plays like that for DK Metcalf, you know, in this playoff run, that it doesn't just end here this next week or the week after, that you get to see DK and Russell Wilson connect on some more special moments like that.
Now, we've been talking about DK Metcalf because of Jalen Ramsey, that matchup being probably the prime one everyone will be watching. I promise you, if you're checking it out on the broadcast, that'll be the one featured on the 710 ESPN and the Seahawks broadcast. That'll be the one that everyone's talking about. But in addition to the offense, there's another important storyline. That's the Seahawks defense, which has been kind of like the middle child of this entire wild card preview all week long. And that's in part because it's easy to write off. Look, the best two units here are going to be Russell Wilson in offense versus the Rams defense. That's how you win this game. You got to be able to score points to advance. And let's talk about how you do that. very understandably, that has been the primary conversation, and it's an important one to have. But another important conversation to have is about the Seahawks defense, because they still have a job to do. And that sounds silly to say, but it is not going to be just easy because Jared Goff is going to be playing injured, or you're going to be seeing a quarterback making his second ever NFL start. So what we're doing today, Jake, is looking at one opportunity for the Seahawks defense and one mistake they cannot make.
One mistake that they cannot make is they cannot allow themselves to not match or overpower the energy level that the Rams are going to bring. They will come out ready to go. You already heard Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey talking about how they want all the smoke, that the Seahawks are exactly the team that they wanted to play because they know them inside and out, you know, all of that conversation, and that they want to beat the Seahawks, who beat them at the end of the season, to win the NFC West crown. There is a lot of motivation for the Rams to come back and make a statement in this game. But obviously with the Seahawks, and what I mean by that, not just some rah-rah conversation, but where it shows up is it shows up at the line of scrimmage. It shows up at the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball. And what the Seahawks were able to do for the majority of the game was they were able to win the line of scrimmage on the defensive side of the ball. Jaron Reed, Puna Ford, they were able to generate penetration in their zone schemes, so there wasn't a bunch of cutback lanes for that running scheme. They love to be able to get you on those wide zones and to be able to cut it back into the middle of the defense. They love to be able to capture the edge, and they were extremely disciplined with that. KJ Wright doing a great job keeping contained, holding the edge, creating a wall for Bobby Wagner and Jordan Brooks to be able to really make significant tackles, you know, with limited yardage. Now, there were a couple drives in there, Stacey, in the middle of the game where they actually were allowing the run game for the Rams to get going. Darrell Henderson averaged 5.2 yards per carry in that game.
Really good.
They averaged 4 yards a carry in that game, and for the Seahawks, what they have to do is they have to be able to generate turnovers, and they have to be able to withstand for 60 minutes on that line of scrimmage.
Now, when we're talking about the opportunities, that's exactly what I'm looking at, the turnovers. This game becomes a lot easier for the Rams if they get a defensive score, and same goes for you. If the Seahawks defense can get a defensive score, this game becomes a lot more winnable for Seattle, because I have all the faith in the world that they can find the end zone on offense. I think they are a better offense than the Rams offense is. And I know some people will point to like yards per or total yards or yards per game as an argument to that. But I don't, with valid stats, when you look at red zone conversions, DVOA, things that analyze like the effectiveness of their offense.
Right.
The Seahawks aren't the best offense in the NFC, but they are a more effective offense than the Rams' offense has been. The Rams' offense has also been even more inconsistent. So I think that if they get that defensive score, they've got a chance. All week, people have been saying, I'm a little worried about John Wolford. I'm a little worried about what he brings, because there's the element of surprise. The Cardinals were not prepared for what Wolford could bring, because how could you be? There's no tape on him.
Yeah, you have no idea.
You have no idea what he's like unless you go watch like AAF games or wherever, you know, it was that he was featured. Like, you really don't know what to expect. And even then, I wouldn't expect a coach to put in designed runs for a quarterback in his first ever NFL start. That's exactly what Sean McVay did. And so Pete Carroll mentioned that. He said they're preparing for both quarterbacks. But I think that people are, and this is going to sound a little harsh, I think people saw one really promising outing from John Wolford. And were that the Seahawks not playing him in the Rams this weekend, I'd be rooting for him. I think it's a really cool story. Mm-hmm. And I like the story of their defensive coordinator, Brandon Staley, too. I think he's got a cool story. But the Seahawks are playing them. And so what I'll say is that I have very little faith in a quarterback making his second ever start against a good defense. I think that you force him into mistakes. And I think he makes those mistakes. He is more likely to make those mistakes than people are, I guess, not willing to admit, but acknowledging right now.
Right. And the Seahawks are no chumps. They're playing top five level defense right now. We're not talking about that they've made significant improvement. We're talking about them playing dominant football to finish this season. And that is a very, very tall order for any defense. And you look at the Arizona Cardinals, in which they just played, they are a good defense, but more middle of the road, more middle of the road, and were facing injuries. And you could tell that there were some guys like Patrick Peterson and others that were making business decisions out there on the field. That's not the way that this Seahawks defense is going to be playing. And the way that they've been able to harass the quarterback over the last, gosh, 6-7 games has been outstanding. And I expect that to continue in this game. So when you talk about this Seahawks defense and the mistakes that they cannot make, I think that overall, like I said, they have to be able to win the line of scrimmage. They have to be able to dominate the line of scrimmage, and they cannot give them any gimmies. You can't allow the explosive plays. And what I'm more worried about is not necessarily explosive plays down the field, Stacey. Mm-hmm. And maybe I'm wrong for thinking that, but that's how much trust I have in this secondary right now. It's more yards after catch. You have to be great, sure tacklers. If a receiver or a running back catches the ball in space, you have to be able to wrap them up and tackle and be able to stop them right then and there. And that, to me, is something that they did, a very underrated aspect of what they did the last time they faced them, is when a ball carrier was in space, they tackled them on the first time. There was no serious broken tackles that you saw in that game, and that's an area that they have drastically improved.
All right, don't miss the Seahawks playoff roundtable today from 3 to 4 p.m. on Wyman and Bob. Every weekday during the playoffs, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton are joined by a cast of our NFL experts with an inside look at the Hawks. The Seahawks playoff roundtable daily, 3 to 4 p.m. on the home of the Seahawks playoff run, 710 ESPN Seattle. All right, taking a quick break from the NFL and the Seahawks to turn to the NBA. How soon could we see the Sonics back in Seattle? ESPN's Brian Windhorst on the latest NBA expansion news joins us next.